You're listening to the Doing English podcast, the no-nonsense English learning show for professionals and experts, helping you forget English isn't your first language. Now, over to Julian.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where in the world you happen to be right now. I'm Julian. Welcome. If I sound like I'm losing my voice, it's because I am. I've just been sat here recording module 4 for the new version of two-step speaking. Module 4 is all about something which I call the LKC triangle, the three things that you need to speak English well. However, it's quite a long module. There's an immense amount of content to be covered in module 4. And although I did quite a good job of cutting it down, it's still quite a lot. It's about an hour to discuss it all. So I've just been sitting here talking constantly for the last hour and I've started to lose my voice. But losing my voice or not, I thought since I'm here, you know, recording anyway, now is a great time to do something for you guys. What are we talking about this time? Have you ever wondered why we wear a ring on our ring finger? If you haven't, why not? I always wonder about these things. I did wonder, so I looked it up. And I don't know how accurate this is or how true this is, because you know, hey, stuff on the internet, not always the most accurate. Not my courses, of course, no pun intended. They are as accurate as I could possibly ever get them. I spend a lot of time researching the stuff that I put into courses. But I did find one interesting reason why we wear a ring on our ring finger. And apparently, 2,000 years ago, Greek physicians believed that we had a special vein that ran from this finger all the way to our heart, a vein that they called the love vein. So naturally then, when people got married, when they tied the knot, they wanted to bind this vein so that the person wouldn't fall in love with someone else. So they started to put a ring on that finger, the idea again being that it would bind the love vein and seal it, as it were. 2,000 years later, I don't think anybody still believes that we have a special vein running from that particular finger right up to our heart. However, the custom of wearing a wedding ring remains. And this kind of got me to thinking. It's interesting, isn't it? How we often believe things that just simply aren't true. The interesting thing about history and science is if you look back to say 100 years before, you'll actually see that the things that people believed at that time, I mean, just even 100 years before, we're talking about 2,000 years before here. The things that people believed at that time were completely wrong. But the interesting thing is people a couple of hundred years ago believed certain things. They believed those to be correct, but they also knew that the things that people before them believed was incorrect. So it's like this constant cycle. We think what we know now is correct. What people knew a few hundred years ago was wrong. Those people a few hundred years ago believed that they were correct, but the people before them were wrong, and so on, and so on, and so on. This makes you wonder what things we now believe that in another 100 years, another couple of 100 years, will be proven to just be completely and utterly wrong. On a much simpler level, when we look at English language learning, or just language learning in general, there are a lot of things that a lot of people believe. Sometimes I think these things are almost considered to be common knowledge, but are actually completely wrong. Things like the best way to learn a language is to learn just like a child, which is not bad advice in itself. But the problem with that is that people believe that children learn their first language really, really easily. Oh, children just hear their parents talking and then suddenly they become fluent. It's like this automatic process. And it is somewhat of an automatic process, but it's not something which happens without effort. You see, kids put an immense, a tremendous amount of work into learning their first language. Anybody who's had kids or has kids, I should say, will know this. When kids get to about two, they reach what we call the terrible two stage, and they start to get irritated and frustrated and cry and just get angry at everything. Part of the reason for this, of course, is because their brains have developed much faster than their linguistic abilities. That is, they are cognitively aware. They are aware of the world. They know what they want. Their ego has started to develop. But their language skills still lag far, far behind. And this drives them insane because they can't communicate the things that they want to communicate. They can't say the things that they want to say. They can't ask for the things that they want. And it really pisses them off. Kids work really, really, really hard to learn their first languages. And my children are learning two first languages. My kids are what I guess we would consider bilingual. I don't like the word bilingual because actually this is another word that people completely misunderstand. People tend to think bilinguals are these people who have two languages in that they are like two monolinguals combined, and that makes a bilingual. Actually, not true. A bilingual's languages are qualitatively different than any monolingual's language. So if you learn Japanese and English as a bilingual, even for like me, someone who became bilingual later in life, your second language, your Japanese, will actually affect your first language, your English, and your English will affect your Japanese, and they will change and become something quite, quite different. Also, there are academic studies which show that a bilingual actually has less proficiency in both languages than a monolingual does in their first language. I'm digressing here, but the point is what we think of being as a bilingual is actually not true. What usually happens is you have people like me and like my kids, where they have one language which is much, much stronger than the other. For my eldest son, that's Japanese. He speaks Japanese as a native speaker. His English, not quite so good. My daughter, on the other hand, went the other way. She seemed to learn English much, much easier. She is a native speaker in English, and her Japanese is at a slightly lower level. My youngest son, we don't know yet because he still speaks just a mix of the two. The point here being that my kids, although they are being raised bilingually and they are kids learning like kids, are not having an easy time of it. They get pissed off. They get frustrated when they can't say something to the friends that they want to say because they don't know their language. They work really, really hard. You have to work really, really hard too. You can't just say, oh, I'm going to learn like a kid, the natural way, and then just do that. It doesn't work like that. And in fact, the natural way, this is something I'll talk about in more detail in another video maybe. The natural way originally was an idea by Stephen Krashen, and it was very, very, very quickly disproved. However, I think it's 30 years since that research was originally done. It's an easy idea to sell. Yeah, just learn in a natural way. People love to hear that, don't they? So that's what they want to do. Regardless of the fact that that has been long disproved, people still believe it. And if you think about it, I mean, a natural way, what does it even mean? Well, the idea is that you just pick up the language. Well, how do you just pick up the language? Kids don't just pick up their language. Kids try really hard. They are consciously trying to acquire the language. My daughter actually did something which resembles shadowing. Nobody taught her to do it. Nobody told her to do it. she would repeat after people, and people would be talking and she'd be looking up at them, repeating, kind of whispering and saying what they were saying. And she still does. When I'm editing videos, my daughter will be sitting on the sofa behind me and repeating things that I say in the video. Again, consciously trying to acquire the language. My son is exactly the same in Japanese and in English. They don't just pick it up. They work really hard to get it. And the point here is that this is something which people believe, and it's kind of detrimental to their improvement because they think, oh, I'll just learn like a kid. I'll just sit here and do nothing. Just watch TV for a couple of hours every day. And then they wonder why they don't get good. And that's why, because they've completely misunderstood the very core concept of what it is, what it means for a kid to learn language. I guess there's all kinds of other things, you know, things that we believe about language learning that, you know, are general common knowledge but just aren't true. I mean, bilingualism is another one. This idea of a bilingual being two monolinguals. Yeah, it's not true. It's not true. It doesn't work like that. That's not how languages work. But yeah, I thought that was quite interesting, the idea of a love vein. And it does kind of show you how far science has progressed. But again, as I said right in the beginning of this episode, the temptation then is to believe that we know everything now, but actually we don't, because in 100 years' time, everything that we know now is going to have been completely disproven and there'll be new ideas will have taken their place. So I guess the point I want to make here to you in my very, very long-winded way of doing this is to be a little bit critical about the things that you believe. Be a little bit critical of the advice that people gives you, including my advice. Don't just take my advice at face value. If I say to you, oh yeah, the best way to get good at English is to do this, don't just go, oh yeah, okay, and then just do that. Think about it. Ask yourself, is he right? Try and think objectively about the advice. Criticize it. Find the weak points. But on the other hand, don't just jump in there with your own opinions. Don't just dismiss something because it doesn't match your personal opinion. And I get this one all the time. People will join one of my courses, for example, two-step speaking, and then the advice that they get will be completely different to the advice that they've heard before. And they don't like it because it doesn't match their own opinion. So they'll just jump in there and just give their own opinion. No, I don't think that's right. The best way to learn English is to learn like a kid. But actually, they don't know anything about what they're talking about. So I think that is about it for today. What are we talking about in the next exciting episode? You know what? I have absolutely no idea because I haven't decided yet. However, if you haven't already, you can and should go and watch the Doing English film. In the Doing English film, I tell you my story as a language learner and the struggle that I went through to master the Japanese language. And part of that was to do with my own preconceptions and my own beliefs about the language learning process. You'll find out all about the struggle that I went through and how I overcame that, and then how you can do the same thing. To check that out, just head over to doingenglish.com. I'll see you on the other side, and I'll see you in the next episode. Thank you, and goodbye.